This Fan Run podcast is brought to you by DraftKings.
Welcome back to the Blitz. Hour number two starts now. Opening drive for you live.
Like you got
get hot.
You got high on there. I've chilled your ears.
I love it. Live FM 105.7 AM 1340. As always, go to fanrunradio.com and click the link at the top for the live stream and on Periscope and Facebook Live and at our Twitter Live as well at Fox Sports Knox on both of those. So let's go ahead and get into an opening drive. First down. We had some news. Going to be an NFL heavy opening drive today, but some news
yesterday
coming out of
the weird day.
It was a weird day. Coming out of the NFL, Las Vegas Raiders defensive end Carl Nassib on Monday became the first active NFL player to come out as gay. Nassib, 28, made the announcement in an Instagram post. Quote, "What's up, people? I'm at my house here in Westchester, Pennsylvania. I just want to take a quick moment to say that I'm gay. I've been meaning to do this for a while now, but I finally feel comfortable enough to get off my chest. I really have the best life. I've got the best family, friends, and job a guy could ask for." This in a statement, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell, he echoed his sentiment for Nassib, said the league is proud of Carl for courageously sharing his truth today. Representation matters. We share his hope that someday soon statements like this, like his, will no longer be newsworthy as we march toward equality for the LGBTQ plus community. We wish Carl the best of luck this coming season. NFL Players Association Executive Director Damaris Smith also added, "Our union supports Carl and his work with the Trevor Project is proof that he, like our membership, is about making his community and this world a better place, not for themselves, but for others." Even his owner and Las Vegas Raiders official Twitter account, I said, "Proud of you, Carl." I like it, man. We're entering a new territory in the NFL where guys are more comfortable expressing their sexuality. This is our first active player, though. Michael Sam, if you forget, back in, what was that, 2014-15, defensive player of the year, came out as homosexual before the NFL draft, but he unfortunately did not make a roster. But Carl Nassib is like I said, defensive lineman for the Las Vegas Raiders. He comes out. What do you guys think this kind of move does for other players? Because I've always said, I mean, there's more players in the NFL that are likely would like to come out, but probably are aware of the hit and kind of how Michael Sam was when he was the first openly player.
Well, Michael Sam kind of got
that was in 2014.
Michael Sam kind of got screwed over by the way the media wanted to
sensationalize it.
Yeah, when they wanted to have, you know, documentary crews at every practice following around an undrafted free agent or a seventh round pick. I mean, that kind of screwed him over in that aspect of things. But I like the way Carl Nassib was just like, "Yeah, yo, what's up?"
They do. Like, "Gay. I am who I am.
I mean, yeah, I agree with what he said. You know, hopefully there's just a day that you don't have to make a video.
Yeah, hopefully it's just, you know, normalcy in the NFL,
like, oh, cool,
where people can be who they are. The only other instance that we've had where it's gained some media attention was Ryan Russell, a free agent at the time, played three seasons between the Cowboys and the Buccaneers, came out as bisexual in a story published by ESPN in 2019. What do you say, GP3, on the news of Carl Nassib?
I mean, good for him, and I'm happy for him that he feels comfortable being able to come out. And I do hope it opens up more doors for other players that might not be ready yet.
I know, man. It's 2021, it's, man.
Yeah, I don't know what it's like inside the locker rooms because, I mean, I've never been there. But the national perception, in my opinion, is not what it used to be. And I hope that, especially now that this has gotten some positive reactions, that other players that are the same way feel more comfortable now.
Yeah, Nassib works with the Trevor Project, which provides crisis intervention and suicide prevention services to LGBTQ plus community. They said they have reached out to their life-saving crisis services, reached out to more than 1.8 million youth who seriously consider suicide each year in the U.S. His former college coach, Penn State head coach James Franklin, said, Carl's brave announcement will forge a path for others to be true to their authentic self. I was proud of Carl when he led the nation in sacks, but I'm even more proud of him now. Hey, be authentic and be who you are. Second down, Charlie.
A pair of NFL arrests yesterday. We'll start out in Arizona. Cardinals first round pick Zaven Collins, the man from Tulsa, was arrested for reckless driving, according to Scottsdale PD. He was going 76 in a 35. They stopped him at 10:04 a.m. on Sunday. That's a weird time in the morning to be doing
a little bit
76 and a 35. His mugshot was released. Looks a little off in the mugshot, but obviously, I mean, it was reckless driving. There's no DUI, no DWI, no possession, nothing like that. So, you know, you think that's probably just a fine and, you know, some sprints after practice at the end of the day. But, yeah, he did get arrested. Also getting arrested yesterday, Kansas City Chiefs defensive end Frank Clark. He was in Los Angeles and was arrested after a police saw an Uzi.
That Uzi.
In his car.
Soldier Boy would say the Draco.
It was a submachine gun, but yeah, an Uzi. He was pulled over for a vehicle violation south of downtown LA 920, and they noticed a bag with an Uzi sticking out in plain sight in the car. Clark was then arrested on suspicion of having that concealed firearm in the vehicle, and then later booked. We're aware of the matter, which will be reviewed under the NFL's personal conduct policy, said NFL spokesman Brian McCarthy. I don't know. In terms of NFL rules, is having an Uzi in your car illegally, is that enough to, you know, actually get in any kind of trouble in the NFL?
I'd say so. Illegally?
I feel like we've seen that before, though, and that hasn't happened. I feel like you got to do something pretty bad, usually, to get in trouble in the NFL.
Isn't an Uzi, though, like one of the weapons that if you don't have a permit for, like, it's, like, super illegal.
Yeah, no, it definitely.
Or have in your possession.
Yeah, 100%. But at the same time.
I'm talking about AR-15. I'm talking about Uzi.
At the same time, Frank Clark is, like, really, really good at football, and usually that helps.
Talent does outweigh punitive. And
I mean, is he going to have to serve time for having this gun, though?
Well, probably not, and I would say probably just because he's really good at football. And I'm not saying that's the way it should be, but that's just kind of the way it is. You know, it's not my personal opinion that, like, it should be that way.
If he doesn't serve time, I could see the NFL maybe suspending him for 4 games, but
it'd be like that.
Maybe just take a chunk of the paycheck.
Third down, Charlie.
Third down. Minnesota Vikings rookie defensive tackle Jalen Twyman was one of several victims wounded in a shooting in Washington, D.C. on Monday, according to a statement from the team. Twyman was in a vehicle when he was shot 4 times, Drew Rosenhaus told ESPN's Adam Schefter. He is expected to make a full recovery. He was shot in the arm, leg, buttocks, and shoulder. There doesn't appear to be any long-term injuries that would prohibit him from playing even this season. Just a wrong place, wrong time. I'm talking to him today. He's going to be okay. That's all that matters. We're thankful he's okay, was what Drew Rosenhaus added. Vikings said they're in direct contact with Twyman and his family. And, you know, things are looking okay.
All right.
Crazy day for the NFL.
Crazy day for the NFL. Lots of news. Also news on Rocky Top from Rocky Top. Fourth down. We talked about this a couple months back, but it is just around the corner. The basketball tournament. That's right. A team comprised of former Tennessee basketball student athletes will be one of 64 squads set to compete in this summer's The Basketball Tournament, a $1 million winner-take-all event. Organized by the one and only VFL point guard, you know him also from his heavy recruiting ties to the University of Tennessee with his AAU efforts, Bobby Mays. The Volunteers, as the name of the team will be called, includes Jordan Bowden, Wayne Chisholm, Duke Cruz, John Fields, Chris Lofton, J.P. Prince, Jawan Smith, Tyler Smith, Cam Tatum, Lamonte Turner, and the team will be coached by the Boom Boom Room himself, Ron Slay. The Volunteers are the number 9 seed in the basketball tournament's Columbus Regional, which will be played at Ohio State's Covelli Center from July 23rd to 27th. So mark your calendars, Vol fans. They will face a team of Purdue alums, the number 8 man of Mackey in first round action on Friday, July 23rd at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Hey, that game is on ESPN, by the way.
Yeah,
it's,
no.
It's not this on is the streaming. It is on, a lot of the games are on ESPN3. This one is on Real Deal Primetime ESPN because they know
when does that
Tennessee-Purdue
July 23rd.
Ready tomorrow
July
night.
23rd. July 23rd. The Volunteers, should they advance, they would face the winner of Carmen's Crew, that is Ohio State alumni, and Mid-American Unity on Sunday, July 25th at 4 p.m. Eastern.
Oh, that's a tough matchup. That Ohio State team wins every year almost.
Yeah, they do. The final games of the Cumulus Regional take place on Tuesday, July 27th. But yeah, like you said, it'll be on ESPN to get to watch your some of your favorite Vols of the past and even see a lot of teams that you followed in college basketball in general. That's why people love this tournament.
It's
very nostalgic for fans, and you see a lot of former players that, you know, they didn't make the jump to the NBA. They maybe had some successful international careers.
We got a revenge tour here.
Yeah, we definitely do.
Well, Purdue, I mean, think about it.
Ohio
Purdue,
State.
Purdue, but then Aaron Kraft is on that Ohio State team every year. So not only the NCAA tournament, but the barbecue snitch.
That's right.
Aaron Kraft, we can get a little revenge.
The championship will take place in Dayton, Ohio at UD Arena. Championship is August 3rd. If you never watched the basketball tournament, they've been known for their use of the Elam ending, which I love. It's a fairly new win-loss determinant in the game of basketball, designed to preserve a more natural end of the game finish. Elam ending calls for the game clock to be shut off at the first dead ball with less than 4 minutes remaining in the fourth quarter. A target score is then established by adding 8 points to the leading team's score. For example, if your score was 80-72, the teams continue play until a team reaches 88 points. No game clock play in the, during the closing minutes. Trailing teams are allowed to focus on getting stops and buckets rather than intentionally fouling. For more information on the Volunteers and tickets for this year's TBT, the basketball tournament, visit thetournament.com. Hey, coming up next, we got Logan Quinton to break down Tennessee, Texas. On the other side, this is The Blitz on Fan Run Radio. Welcome back to The Blitz, live here on Fan Run Radio, FM 105.7. Now it's time to get down to the nitty-gritty with our guy. You love him. We also love him. Our baseball expert. You can find his work at fanrunradio.com. The man, the myth, the legend, Logstradamus. What's up, Logan Quinton?
What is up, guys?
How are you, sir?
I woke up ready for this, the Battle of the Orange, the Battle of the UTs, however you want to call it. I mean, it feels like this is a long time coming, a matchup between Tennessee and Texas, no matter the sport, whether it's football, basketball. Now we've got it in baseball. Let's see. There's a lot on the line. Looking forward to it. I know we're... The Vols are Pantone 151?
Yes.
What is Texas just burnt orange, or they got some cute little label?
They are. I literally just was looking at this.
It's just burnt orange, in my opinion. That's all I know.
I mean, it's the worst orange. It's the worst of the two.
They are far. Pantone 159.
Ooh. 159. Okay.
Yeah. Never want to be 159. Want to go full 159. Tennessee, always want to stay 151.
Tennessee is founded in 1794, Texas 1883. We're Pantone 151. They're Pantone 159 just because we're better.
Yep.
They're just way behind in customs.
Yeah, they are. Hey, Logan, glad you can make some time for us, man, on short notice today. We love breaking it down with you. The Vols, man, they took a tough one on Sunday, losing to a hot pitcher in Virginia's Abbott, shut him out. I believe it was 10 strikeouts on the evening. How do the Vols bounce back, and how are you feeling? Are you feeling confident, or are you feeling a little bit nervous, anxious? Say how you feel for us. We went around, like, I think most of us are just anxious for the game to start. It's just uncharted territory for most Vol fans with Tennessee in the postseason losing a game and you know, a winner go home now since the run that they've had.
Yeah, I'm anxious as well, too. And if it comes down to, you know, how I feel about the Volunteers' fate, a little bit anxious about that too. But in my mind, I have to keep telling myself that there's no reason to doubt this team when it comes to how well they'll respond after a performance like that. Look, they've responded all year. Whenever they've got punched in the mouth or there's been some little bump in the road, they've literally not let it turn into a bad streak at all. But really, the only time they lost back-to-back games on the season, it happened on the same day when they lost back-to-back to Indiana State. It was a two-game set, part of a four-game series. So really, they haven't had, when you've had back-to-back days or taken a loss and then had a couple of days off, I mean, they've been able to respond and bounce back. And, you know, is this going to be an opportunity like they had when they opened the SEC tournament? You know, they laid an egg that first game, a very low-scoring game, similar fashion, just couldn't get the bats going. And they went on a tear right up until they met Arkansas in the SEC championship game. So I'm looking to see if they can make that happen. But it's going to be tough. I mean, Texas, these teams are so similar in terms of what they have to offer. And so I'm looking at how well the bats can do the first time through the lineup. You know, that's really, they have to get going. You can't look up in the fifth inning and not have any runs and see a bunch of zeros up there. They have to get something going early because I feel like that's what they need. They need that homer. They need a couple of extra base hits in a row to really get this lineup going. And when it does, I think they'll have something cooking.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. You know, how comfortable do we feel if this comes down to a pitching duel between Blade Tidwell and I'm not sure who's actually pitching for Texas this afternoon. You can tell me that if you've got information on that. But how comfortable do we feel about that? It seems like you're more comfortable on the other side of the Vols getting out quickly and getting those bats going again. But how comfortable should fans be if this turns into a pitching duel with Blade Tidwell and the opposing pitcher?
Well, I think once it turns over to the bullpen, that's where Tennessee has the edge. Like, if this game becomes a bullpen game and there's some runs scored, then, you know, that the edge goes to Tennessee. Or if you're Tennessee, jump on them like you did against Mississippi State a couple weeks ago, and the bullpen doesn't even matter. You know, that's like one of the two ways I see this working out for Tennessee. But I fully expect Tidwell, if it's him, to come out and show out. It's going to be interesting because Will Bednar for Mississippi State, very similar pitcher. Obviously, Tidwell is a freshman, but look, he's been Tennessee's best pitcher down the stretch. He has the lowest ERA out of the weekend starters. He has the best home run per nine rate out of the weekend starters. I mean, he just he throws hard. And, you know, Texas struggled with that type of pitching the other night. So maybe that Tidwell, if he can come out and, you know, just give up, let's say if he goes six or seven, giving up, you know, three or less, you know, I really look at that as a shot for Tennessee to have success. And then on the other side, on the bump, nothing's official yet either way, but I expect it to be lefty Pete Hansen. You know, I really think Texas, they've kind of mixed it up all year, but they're all good. Like, all their guys, I mean, this is, I think Charlie mentioned it last week on the show, their team ERA in terms of their starters is outstanding. One of the three guys it'll be will be Witt, Hansen, or Stevens. Those guys have a combined record of like 24-4 on the year, so I mean, no matter who it is, it's going to be tough. But Hansen is the lefty of the bunch. He's a strikeout guy, much like, you know, we saw with Abbott the other night with Virginia. I think Texas would, you know, be apt to throw another lefty out there for this Tennessee lineup because they, you know, they struggle with a hard-throwing lefty the other night. That's what I expect to see from them. And so it's going to be a battle. You know, Tidwell and Hansen, they're both young guys. Hansen's a redshirt freshman, and Tidwell, the true freshman, but he will be eligible. You know, he's a little bit older freshman. He'll be draft eligible next year. So I can't wait for it. But that's what I expect, Tidwell and Hanson.
Logan, I know when I look at these two teams, you know, I find it hard to find any significant advantage for either team in really any specific element of this game. You know, how evenly matched really are these teams, and is there any area where either team does have a significant advantage over the other?
Yeah, no, you're right. Like, it's almost like a mirror image. I mean, you already have the UT versus UT, Orange versus Orange. I mean, this is a mirror image matchup. But like I said, the bullpen is where the difference is going to be made if this is a tight one and you're the Vols trying to figure out how to win this thing. For one, like I said, you've got to jump on them early somehow, some way, find a way to get a couple of runs early. The Vols have done well with that, no matter, you know, with the exception of Abbott the other night. They've really been able to manage stiff pitching really well this year. Rocker, I know, put them out, and they had so much trouble with Rocker early in the year, and that's really when Rocker was at his best, and he kind of peaked. But really, any other star pitcher that they faced, where it's Jeremy Arrow or you know, even Leiter, Patrick Wicklander, they've handled all those guys really well. And so I expect them to come out a little early and, you know, put some runs up. I don't know how, I really don't expect them to run away from Texas. So if you're in a battle there for the first 5-6 innings and just get to Texas's bullpen, if you can get to Texas's bullpen and you're Tony V, you know that you have all hands on deck, whether it's Will Heflin, Camden Sewell, Sean Hundley, those type of guys. That's kind of where the edge lies, is at the end of the game. You just got to figure out a way to stay in it. And I think they've got the lineup to do that. I think they've got the pitching to do that with Tidwell, even though he's such a young guy. He's seasoned now. It's like he's a sophomore now. He's as old as most sophomores, but I think he's, in terms of maturation, he's beyond his years.
Speaking of the bullpen, just a quick question. You know, I assume you think Sean Hundley's available today despite pitching 2 days ago?
Yeah, I do. I don't know, but this is going to be interesting because it's do or die, all hands on deck. So normally Tennessee sticks to a strict plan in terms of usage, but now with it being, you know, lose or go home or win or go home, you've got to have Heflin ready if things go awry early. And then you've got to have guys like Sewell, Hundley. You got to have the best of the best ready. So it'll be interesting to see how they manage that. But, yeah, it's all hands on deck. I think Hundley's ready. And that I would look for either Sewell or Heflin to come out first, depending on what the score is and how tight it is. If it's tight, I would think Sewell might be the first one called, and then, you know, reserving Hundley for, you know, a save closeout type situation.
Yeah, so it is interesting to see how different coaches obviously handle the elimination game, because, you know, it is all hands on deck with your pitching staff, but at the same time, you don't want to put yourself in a situation where you, if you do win the game, you really don't have anybody to go in the next one. So you do think that, you know, if necessary, we could see Heflin and Sewell and really just empty out your starting pitching to get through this one?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think that's out of the question. But who knows? It may go another way to where it you know, that really doesn't present itself. But with that said, I mean, Tennessee, when you talk about the depth, you can even go deeper than Sewell and Hundley and Walsh and Cannell. Like, when you're talking about a potential starter for, you know, a couple of days from now, like, they can open up with Matt McLaughlin. And, you know, when you're reaching that deep in the bag, I don't know if there's not many teams that have the guys that Tennessee does, you know, that deep in the staff. So they've got an advantage there because, you know, whoever, you know, if you advance a couple of days from now, you know, it's not like you're going to be going up against you know, top tier starters. So yeah, I expect all hands on deck. I mean, they've got to figure out a way to win in advance, because the more the bats, you know, get going, the more those guys have plate appearances, that's only the better for Tennessee. That's what they need. They just need, those bats need reps. And once they get going, they can support a lot of guys on this staff, no matter who it is.
Again, talking with Logan Quinton of the Fan Run Radio website, Best Baseball Brain in Knoxville, LDQ Sports on Twitter. Logan, you know, we just talked about how Tennessee would likely be able to have that all-hands-on-deck mentality if that situation presents itself. Would you expect Texas to have that same mentality? I know that they have probably the best three-man rotation in the country. Would they use both today's starting pitcher, obviously, and then, you know, that third starter out of the pen, you think?
Yeah, I would expect it, especially if it's a leverage situation. Because, like I said, they're much like Tennessee, you know, they're a solid, well-rounded team. And, you know, if it's just win and advance, and then you've got a lineup, a stout lineup that can back you up here in a couple of days when you're just sort of filling in the gaps and piecing things together on the mound. So, yeah, I expect the same from Texas. Like I said, you mentioned it, their starting rotation is really stout. So whether it's Stevens or Witt was named freshman All-American this morning, I believe. It was either this morning or last night. So he's another young guy with a lot of talent. But, yeah, whether it's Stevens, Witt, or Hanson today, the Vols are going to have their hands cut out. And I expect, you know, any of those guys to be available with the battle of the UTs tonight.
Logan, something that we've talked about and we'll continue to talk about, especially if it's the downfall of this team this afternoon, was the downfall on Sunday with eight runners left on base. Is that the continued X factor that the Vols just have to clean up today? And do you think they find a way to finally get some runners in scoring position and actually knock them in?
Yeah, that's been the key. You know, I don't know if weakness is the right term, because it's never really affected them for most of the year. But that's been one underlying metric, because it gets covered up because of all the home runs and extra base hits and mm-hmm. all the clutch moments and walk-offs and everything. And you look and see that this is a stout offense, despite not having an overwhelming batting average. But if you followed along like we have and a lot of fans have, you start to notice there's a trend with leaving a lot of guys on base. And you just think if there's just an uptick in that type of production of bringing those guys home, you know, what this offense could be. And you're right. Yeah, you can't leave those ducks on the pond. They've got to find a way to bring guys in. They had so many opportunities against Virginia, didn't capitalize. You know, I think they do. I really think they do. Like I said, I'm not going to doubt them, even though the anxiety is through the roof in that regard, going up against this type of pitching from Texas. You know, it's got to take, you know, a guy like Jake Rucker or Drew Gilbert to really come through with a huge extra base hit, whether it's a double in the gap that brings in a couple of runs or a three-run homer, something to open the game up. You know, I don't think that they're going to drill Hanson or, you know, either of the other guys. But if you can just have a crack of the bat moment that, you know, scores in, you know, multiple runs just to get that offense going a little bit, you know, that's what it's going to take. And I expect some kind of moment like that.
Logan, we're running out of time, but before we get to your prediction, you know, this Texas lineup, like we mentioned, pretty much a mirror image of Tennessee. They're also deep 1-9. But they did strike out 21 times just 2 days ago out of the 27 outs. You know, who are some of the hottest bats in this Texas lineup, and who do you really have to be careful with in this lineup if you're Blade Tidwell and in this Tennessee pitching staff?
All of them.
All of them.
Like you said, much like Tennessee, they work you 1-9. And you bring up an interesting point, you know. It's all Bednar and Mississippi State. I think it was just Bednar and Sims. Yeah, it, just those two guys from Mississippi State tallied 21 strikeouts. The one thing, another thing that we should have mentioned, or I should have brought up, was that as great as Abbott was against Tennessee, they got some good contact. They were hitting the ball hard. A lot of them were right to folks. It wasn't like he was unhittable, like you're talking about with Texas and Mississippi State the other night. They just couldn't put the bat on the ball. And, you know, so that's one thing. If I'm looking at this matchup today, that's what I'm feeling good about if I'm a Volunteer fan. And if I'm Tony V and crew, like, you hit the ball hard. Like, you sort of, you did your thing. That's kind of their MO. They hit the ball hard, a lot of drives, a lot of lift. They did a lot of that against Virginia, despite not having so much success. That's a lot better than just not seeing the ball, not experiencing that contact, and then trying to go back at it again. So that's one area that I think Tennessee has the advantage, the fact that they did see the ball, they barreled it much more than Texas. Let's see if they can get it going and put it in some gaps and find some holes.
All right, Logan, before we let you get out of here, go ahead and give us a prediction for this evening's game.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a tight one. I really do. But like I said, I'm not going to doubt the Vols. I can't do it. As much as anxiety that I have about the game, they've not let us down the whole year when they've gotten punched in the mouth. I'm going to come out and predict a 5-3 Volunteer victory.
Hey, we love to hear it. He's Logan Quinn. You can find him on Twitter at LDQ Sports. Also, go find his wonderful work at fanrunradio.com. Hey, Logan, it's been a fun ride, man. Hopefully we continue this and the Vols stay in Omaha for a couple more days.
Let's do it. Let's keep it rolling, fellas.
Hey, thank you, Logan.
Hey, horns down, baby.
Horns down. Appreciate the call. That was Logan Quinn. If you missed him, you can check him back on the podcast later on. We'll come back. We'll go ahead and get to the Tennessee football breaking news that we've been holding off for the end of the show and preview some of these NBA games before we head out. Talk Sports, boys. They're in the house. They're ready to go. This is Fan Run Radio. M 105.7 AM 1340. That was Logan Quinn breaking down the Vols taking on the Longhorns here in about less than, let's see what we got now. A couple hours away from first pitch.
3 hours and 17 minutes.
Good job, Charlie. That was quick math.
Big
for
math
you.
Guy.
Yeah. I am too. I just couldn't find my.
No, I'm not a math guy at all.
And it's that not, and it's not three. It's not 3 hours, though. Is it 2 Central or 2 Eastern?
2 Eastern.
Okay, so it's not 3 hours,
oh,
though.
No.
It's 2
oh,
hours.
Oh, no.
Big math guy.
Oh, no. We know I'm not a math guy.
I know. It's what I thought. I was like, you've never been a math guy. 2 hours and 17 minutes away, though, to first pitch on ESPNU. Thank you to Logan Quinn for breaking down with us. But we have some breaking news from the Tennessee football team, and not the type of news we really were prepared to hear, but it's kind of the type of news that we hear every offseason. But for the second time, in as little as about, 3.5 months, University of Tennessee football player, quarterback, 5-star standout Caden Salter is back in trouble with the law. Caden Salter and Amari McNeil face misdemeanor charges that include simple possession after being stopped in a vehicle early Saturday on the Cumberland Avenue Strip, University of Tennessee Police Department reports show. For the freshman quarterback, Salter, who is 18, this is the second time he's faced police scrutiny in 3 months. He was suspended in March and reinstated by Coach Josh Heupel early this month after he was among 4 other players accused in an incident at Stokely Hall on campus. UT Athletics released this statement Monday afternoon. Quote, we are aware of the incident and are awaiting further information. According to UTPD's police log, the minor charges Saturday lodged against Salter included driving without a license, display of registration plates, violation of the light law, and confiscation. This incident happened about 3 a.m. What the hell were you riding around at 3 a.m. for? Everybody knows after 1, only bad things happen.
Dude, just smoking.
And riding dirty with no no license, no lights on the tail on his license plate. The report states Mr. Salter was stopped for a violation of light law, that's no taillights, and a tinted plate cover over the vehicle's registration. Mr. Salter subsequently admitted post-Miranda to having marijuana, approximately about 4 grams, according to WBR 10 News, who first reported this, and telling his passenger, Amari McNeil, to throw it out when officers stopped the vehicle. Salter from Dallas, McNeil from Sewanee, Georgia, committed to Tennessee in December after playing for Peachtree Ridge High School. That is McNeil, as considered a defensive lineman prospect. He's not shown on the UT football player spring roster, though. He joined during summer workouts June 1st. Let's see. The UTPD report from McNeil states that on June 19th, 2021, at approximately 3 o'clock, traffic stop was performed in the vehicle. A bag of marijuana observed on the ground in front of the vehicle, and McNeil admitted to throwing the bag from the vehicle in hopes of avoiding detection. Never throw it, guys. They should have just ate it. McNeil was charged with simple possession and released from the scene. And like we said, in March, 4 players were involved in a confrontation with a resident at Stokely. Salter was a juvenile at the time, and he was not publicly named, but we found out later that he was involved. Well, what do we think about this, boys?
I'm not going to hit you with some, you know, Stephen A's, stay off the weed or anything like that.
We
like,
know college kids
look, people
smoke,
smoke. People smoke, especially
people smoke,
in college.
Especially college,
college
kids.
Athletes all over the country, they're smoking weed.
They definitely are.
College students all over the country, they're smoking weed.
Some of your biggest stars.
The thing is,
they're smarter about it.
Like, I mean, personally, I have a ton of friends that are not smart people. I would not consider them the brainiacs by any means. Those same friends are the kind of people that smoke weed every day. And not one of them has ever been caught. Not one of them has ever gotten a possession charge. And you're telling me that 3 months after you get arrested, that you're not going to be more careful? I mean, to me, that just it shows incredible immaturity. And it shows just a lack of caring. It shows that you don't care enough or you're just reckless enough where you are still out driving around at 3 a.m. with weed and a busted taillight. Dude, just smoke at home. Just smoke at home. It's not that hard to not get caught.
Frankly, Scarlett, I don't give a damn.
I mean, have some awareness, man. And now that's probably going to be the end of the road for Caden Salter.
I would
assume that he is done. His Tennessee career is probably done. And we didn't even get to see him in spring ball.
Yeah, not one snap. That was my question. That was going to be, as a question all of all fans are asking themselves this morning, asking everybody's trying to think of what Josh Heupel's staff is going to do. I am with you, Charlie. I think when you get arrested in March and you turn around and get arrested back in June, and for some of the same incidents, it does show immaturity, and that's not something that you need the starting quarterback position or even somebody that in the SEC football team. You got to be smarter than that. You got to be a little bit more mature. I know you're a college kid. I know you're a fresh 18, but it was dumb. It's reckless. I tend to, when we talked about this in the Breaks podcast, I said that I don't necessarily think that he doesn't care. I'm not Caden Salter. I don't know. But it just speaks of reckless behavior and, most importantly, immaturity. What do you say, GP3, before we head out of this segment?
Yeah, I tend to disagree. I think he did make a mistake. But, you know, usually people get a 3-strike rule, I guess. So, I mean, this could be his last final warning. But we just sat a couple segments ago and talked about Frank Clark having an Uzi and his talent outweighing, whatever. This is a 5-star prospect coming in here, and it's weed. I mean, we get it. It's wrong. It's illegal. But it's not like he's out there, you know, doing something crazy bad.
Very true.
And I don't know. And then we heard Nick Saban say a couple years ago, if I kick him off my team, what's he going to go do if he's not in my program? Let me have the chance to rehabilitate him. So
I feel like the 3-strike rule in college, though, is a 1-strike rule. Like, you get 1 second chance, and then you're done. And I think
– I don't know. Nick Saban Cam Robinson come back after he was caught with another dude in a park with a loaded gun, not registered, and they had pot.
Like,
so,
I agree with Nick
Saban.
That's
Nick Saban.
I completely agree with Nick Saban. But the thing is, you can't do it twice. And if you're going to do it twice, you can't do it within 3 months. And if you're going to do it twice
– that is tough.
You know – be better than driving around in a car that is going to get you pulled over with your tags hidden, with your taillight busted out. If you're going to be driving around at 3 in the morning on the strip with your taillight busted out and your tags hidden, don't have weed on you. And it's summer break, so it's not like there's a lot of cars out there or a lot of, you know, things keeping UTPD busy, so you have an even better chance of getting pulled over. I don't know. I feel like if you're going to do this twice, at least space it out a little bit. It's just,
I mean, I think it's incredibly stupid, but I just don't think it warrants kicking the guy off the team. It's dumb, but he is 18. I mean, we all did dumb things when we were 18.
I still do dumb stuff.
You got to do dumb stuff and learn, though.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing.
Well, how are you going to learn if you don't give him a chance to learn?
Well, you did give him a chance. You suspended him, and you gave him a second chance, and what did he learn? He learned nothing, apparently, because he's out driving around with a busted taillight and weed.
Hey, all good points from the both of you guys. We'll see what happens. We'll continue to watch that story. We'll keep our ears to the surface, see what Josh Heupel is going to do with one Caden Salter. Hey, final segment coming up. This is the Blitz. You hear the music, so you know it's a game day. Final segment of the Blitz on this Game Day Central. Tennessee facing off against the Texas Longhorns here at 2 p.m. And, Charlie, that would be 2 hours and 6 minutes for those of you keeping count at home. Talk Sports boys are in the vestibule. They're ready to go. They got you jam-packed.
I was
for
on
the
Atlantic
next
time.
The next 3 hours, you're on that Atlantic time. Hey, it's cool. At least you weren't on Demon Time. Hey, we're going to go ahead and end the show with our predictions. Go around the room. I'll start first. I kind of believe, man. I believe, and I feel like I got to believe this team has done it all season long with their backs against the wall. They got the grit. Hopefully they come out with no lemon booty on this particular day. It seems like they were very tight on Sunday. They didn't have the swagger. They didn't have the confidence. I hope they got a little loose, had a little fun over the last day or so, day and a half, and are able to come out and play with that swagger that we all saw all season long. Give me the Vols and a tight, high-scoring matchup. 8-6. Get the bats going early. We see some long balls today. Go Vols.
All right, yeah, I'm in agreement with you and Logan. I do think Tennessee's going to come out on top. I think it's going to be a close game. And I'm going to go as far as to say that the Vols will win 7-5 on a walk-off two-run shot.
Oh. Putting throwing a
walk off. Well, it can't be a walk-off. Well, ninth inning.
Yeah, I guess.
Go ahead.
Ninth inning.
Go ahead. You know, you feel like with how good both of these lineups are and both teams having pitiful offensive performances Sunday, the law of averages would tell you they both hit today, but I don't know. You're going to get two really good pitchers on the mound. Texas pitching staff is awesome. Blade Tidwell is awesome. And, you know, I think the advantage comes once you get into the bullpen. So I think you get a low-scoring game. You know, I think Tennessee takes a slight lead into the bullpen, closes it out for Tennessee. Give me the Vols 3-2.
Hey, baby.
Let's
love
go,
it.
Baby.
Vols
Let's
all around. Go
hey,
big orange.
Horns down. If you're out there in the car, hands off the steering wheel, it doesn't matter. Jesus, take the wheel. Put the horns down. Let's go.
Hey.
Let's get it. Fake UT. Send them packing.
That's right. Today is National Chocolate Eclair Day, National Onion Rings Day, and National HVAC Tech Day. Hug your local HVAC. Hey, for Charlie, for GP3, I'm Chance Collins. Talk Sports is up next. They got you covered from 12 to 3. Keep it locked here all day on Fan Run Radio.